You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. May the flocks gather, and may they awaken, and may they know who their God is and his name, the mighty name of Yahweh, the Most High, the only God. There is no other beside him. Tonight, or today, I thought I'd do a message that can't be found anywhere, and it's one given by Dr. Wesley A. Swift. So the title of this message is The Unclean Frogs of Revelation. Now, you can find the transcript of this. And there's many of his sermons that can be found and many that can't be found. And many are very hard to listen to. And on my specific YouTube channel, I have been cleaning up the sermons of Dr. Wesley Swift. Sometimes they're still even hard to hear because I don't know what was going on in the 60s and 70s, but it was a tough time for recording fellows like this. But anyway, I feel it's my duty to see that these missing sermons, or at least the best of these missing sermons, get done, so that you can take advantage of what he had taught. Yes, I'm riding his coattails. His coattails, ladies and gentlemen. But that's okay, because he is a much better teacher than I. But maybe not forever. Who knows? Only Yahweh and time can tell. I really enjoy the teachings of Dr. Wesley Swift, because I don't care about the doctors and all that kind of stuff, but I mean, I really think his teachings are very good. It's good to hear a manly voice in the world, in a world of sissies. And I better not say anything after that. I don't want to mention the women. They go nuts. But anyway, let's get on to this message. Now, of course, you know, it's called The Unclean Frogs of Revelation. As we turn to this subject of the unclean frogs of Revelation, I think it is important that we consider our relationship to the chain of events through which we have been passing. As we have said, America responds with great waves of emotion to great historic events that prevent some of the majesty of a great nation. In the inauguration of a president, they were caught with the swelling emotion of pageantry of America and its history, and they all wish to believe as well as possible in the president whose forthright address was challenging. Although there were facets of it which were not acceptable, within all the events of this hour, I can tell you that behind the scenes moved forces hard sometimes to analyze unless one is aware of all the facts that are involved in the scene. There is no doubt that to Protestants everywhere, this election and the speed with which it swept across the nation in a great rising force of a minority movement and its organizations to behind a candidate who little over a year ago or so was not known to many people through the nation. Does that sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen? Did that not just happen to us with this very presidency? If you call that a president, I don't. I don't recognize that man or what that beast or whatever it is, that demon. I don't recognize that as any leader of any nation that I want to belong to. That may be an orchestration of the devil and his children. However, I recognize it not. He's speaking here of John Kennedy, Senator Kennedy. So let's move along. And even in Washington, D.C., he was not known so well. For if you asked where Senator Kennedy was from, they couldn't tell you. Whether from Indiana or Ohio or just where. The fact was that to the average government worker, he's just another congressman or senator from somewhere. And to those who watched the political life of the nation, they knew that he came from a powerful, wealthy Irish Catholic family from the Boston, Mass area. Those who knew more about it knew that he was connected with the Fitzgeralds, the Curleys, and all the political strength that once came out of Boston. Now we are well aware that the election has come and gone, but as we look out of this situation, there are some things which we cannot forget. It is rather generally believed by all those who are observing the situation in Washington that the election was never decided on the amount of votes cast. Does that sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen? They do not believe that Kennedy actually won that election. I found that most everyone believed that the election had been won as to the matter of numbers in most of deciding states by Mr. Nixon. One of those things I would like to recall to your mind, even though you say it's too late. It has no part now in this picture. Just consider it. I consider it most significant, and I think it should be looked out, or he should say sought out. This is that one of the most active crusaders for Mr. Nixon and one of the most active anti-communist authorities in the field of his church, one who supported Mr. Nixon quite thoroughly, was Cardinal Spellman of New York City. Now, that alerts me right away. Cardinal Spellman. Sounds like a Jewish name. It would not surprise me if it were so. However, playing the Hegelian dialectic again, here's what he says. Cardinal Spellman was known to be very anti-communist and to have backed Mr. Nixon because of his anti-communism and his part in the Un-American Activities Committee. I think it rather significant that while we are still evaluating everything in its proper attitude, that you know that Cardinal Cushing put in a request to Rome, and Rome gave the order for Cardinal Spellman to be quiet for the remainder of the campaign. This was even as they had silenced Father Coughlin earlier, and now they made it impossible for Cardinal Spellman to support in New York State one of the most important prelates to the Catholic Church, the election of Mr. Nixon. When I cite that again, I see another head rising, and I see the symbol of the hierarchies of their power. And one recognizes, though they well could have done this to throw the support to a son of the church and would have considered that a great victory, still at the same time, one wonders Why that in this measure they silenced their cardinal as they had silenced Father Coughlin when he pointed out things he thought most important. One of the things Cardinal Spellman pointed out was that there were a lot of anti-Christian forces that seemed to be supporting this candidate and had moved into a strange paradox of alignment behind the Kennedy power. He was one who in the church from whence he came pointed out the immense amount of personal and private money that was being thrown in this campaign and wondered about the involvement it might lead to in our national history. I think it rather interesting to note also the attitude of Mr. Juman, during his campaign, for what came over Mr. Juman, who went out stomping the country for Mr. Kennedy, while as a Mason, he should have withdrawn from this situation. For some reason, I believe that Dr. Wesley Swift did not understand the Masonic institution. And he thought, for some reason, that it was an honorable institution. However, we know a lot more now about that than they knew then. Just as we know things that they don't know, you know, they thought Russia was going to be the end of, you know, the Armageddon type of thing. It was going to be the end of the world. They were going to come and with the hordes of the Mongols and come over here and attack us. However, that does not seem to be exactly what is going to take place. However, that doesn't mean anything. They saw it that way at that time. That doesn't mean that, you know, that doesn't, you know, negate everything else they had taught, is what I'm trying to say. So let's continue. We can well understand that there had been animosity between these two men when Congressman and Senator Mr. Kennedy, from both positions, had attacked the policies of both Mr. Truman and Mr. Marshall when they deserved that attack by their handling of Red China and the sabotaging of the Chiang Kai-shek, or the sabotaging of Chiang Kai-shek. But at the same time, this movement by Mr. Truman made this a significant thing in the study of what transpired. I think it most significant that Mr. Truman went to Texas campaigning for Senator Kennedy, and he suddenly became very angry at Baptists who were supporting Mr. Nixon on the basis of their religion. Mr. Truman said, all these Baptists, and he used the swear word, all these so-called Baptists ought to go to hell. Now, what's funny about this is the Hegelian dialectic being played out right before your eyes, because the Baptists, it's well known that they are totally penetrated by the Masons and the Masonic orders. That's why I laughed. So this was rather strange for a Mason and a Baptist to say about the Baptists of Texas, if they didn't support the candidate of the party. Even although he was himself a Mason and a Baptist, see, and as such was moving into the wrong avenue, I think there is a rather strange factor involved in this. We kind of wonder whether this peculiar kind of theology, which is part of the background of this church, wasn't becoming so contagious that they had Mr. Truman marching around consigning people to perdition if they didn't vote his way. I think it rather interesting as to the reaction of Mr. Truman when they were making a study of the conclusions of the election. They were making a study as to how both candidates were supported throughout the United States. I only point this out because there were strange forces at work, and we are not challenging the fact that the president may reverse himself on the positions he took during the campaign, for we hope he will. But the fact remains that the farmers did not buy the program that Mr. Kennedy supported when he was candidate for the party. The farm plank of the Democratic platform, I want to recall to your memory is a complete Soviet system of control, including the permission to grow, the permission to sell, the administration, and hiring and everything else. It is a 100% Soviet program for the farmers. It sure is. And it's one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto. At that point in time, they were bringing them all into America. So obviously you can see they were working on that particular plank. I think it is rather interesting that during the last campaign, one of the men whom you and I might call the most egg-headed liberal of all in the U.S. was none other than Secretary of Agriculture Wallace. You remember that in Mr. Roosevelt's administration, he was the kill the pigs Wallace, plow under the grain Wallace, and in all of this, he thought he was Sir Galahad on a white horse. And he followed the strange yogi who came out of India and Tibet and thought that he had all the answers to everything, but at the same time, Mr. Wallace was considered a liberal. I hope you're paying attention, ladies and gentlemen. But during this campaign, Mr. Wallace supported Mr. Nixon because of the farm program plank of the Democratic Party. See, what you're witnessing, what I have to mention here is you're witnessing what he's telling you is these two parties are fighting one another, and they go back and they skip from party to party because why? Because there's a synthesis of the two parties. So the two parties are becoming glued together as a one-party system. And that's eventually what it is. It is today practically a one-party system. There's virtually no difference between the two. And that's what the Hegelian dialectic says, that the two opposing forces will fight one another until the synthesis occurs. Okay? And that remark was from one considered a liberal in the Roosevelt days and was so left of center that if anything could go further left than that, then that made Americans wonder with some consternation. Well, the fact was quite gratifying, for when studying over what those farm planks actually guaranteed, the overwhelming decision in all the major farm areas was to give their vote impact to Mr. Nixon and not to Mr. Kennedy. And even Bob Kennedy, when he toured the country, came back to say, the one area we couldn't carry and couldn't seem to influence was the farm states. So, since they don't have the electoral votes, we will move the machine and work with the units of labor. Yeah. And the minority vote, and we will do it all, and we will do all we can to capture, okay, we will do all we can to capture the election in these areas of greater electoral votes. I think it rather significant because at that time, it is important for you to know that in Washington, when I was there, this was after the election, and Mr. Truman was one of those who surveyed the election and the way people had voted. And when he saw that the farmers didn't vote for the Democratic candidate, he turned and cursed the farmers. And he said he didn't give a whoop, another swear, what happened to the farmers anyhow. Sounds like a Jew to me. And then he went far enough to say, they will learn their lesson in the next few years. Well, let's hope that Americans learn one more lesson in the next few years, which is to remain on the guard day and night against creeping socialism, communism, and political interference by a hierarchy anywhere from any part of the world. I feel that in the general trend, the president-elect has learned a lesson as to how parts of America feel. I think he discovered in the days of preceding his inauguration that he had a Congress and a Senate who were aware of the temper of the people. I was told of how the numbers of letters arriving on the desks of congressmen and senators had doubled in the last few days since the election. I was to discover that throughout the country and outside of a few of the ecclesiastical leaders who keep themselves somewhat modified in their position, that the Protestants were alarmed throughout the country with movements that might be invasions of their liberty. Might be, huh? They were not at all sure that they could depend on their civil liberties being guaranteed if they continued to be against positions put forward ecclesiastically from the pulpit, or whether they might retain the freedom they possessed in the past. It was cited that they could not count on the continued freedom of the past on the basis of the fact that in his speech, the president-elect repudiated most of the positions he supported when he ran. See, the reason why I'm having a problem reading this is because it's not written well, and that's not Dr. Wesley Swift. It's just the punctuation is improper and there's misspelled words. But however, I will continue. So, let me start here again. It was cited that they could not count on the continued freedom of the past on the basis of the fact that in his speech, the president-elect repudiated most of the positions he supported when he ran, and that were in the platform. Of course, it was a good thing to repudiate some of these things, and it was politically expedient knowing it was impossible to carry them out. In the last few minutes, as I was glancing over the newspapers, there was something heartening because we have watched some of these men like Senator Dirksen and Senator Bridges who have been carrying on an opposition to those things which need to be opposed. And suddenly I see that Senator Dirksen is saying that he is going to lead the opposition to a refusal, confirm and to approve some of these liberal plans, and see what I mean? See how he's, you know, they're just sort of, you know, flopping like a flounder all over the place, these senators. They just change their party mindset, you know, from day to day and week to week. So here he is, he's going to approve things that he didn't agree with before. I wonder how much money that cost. That's the problem with our society, ladies and gentlemen. There's too many sellouts. There's too many people willing to take a gift. And that's been going on for far too long. Okay, I think that if this is what it took to wake up some of these men like Senator Dirksen, then it may be worthwhile. He stated, "The conservative forces, both Democrat and Republican, are going on guard against these things to make sure that American lifestyle is not changed and totalitarian authority will not move out in this hour to try and direct all of our destiny in the name of emergency measures." May I tell you that part of the reason we are at perpetual war is because it keeps the president special, it gives the president special executive powers through the War Powers Act. That's why we are at perpetual war, and also because a country cannot maintain its freedom when it's in a state of perpetual war. So he continues, "Strangely, we say again This does not mean that there is not sincerity in the moves of the president might make, in the moves that the president might make. This is bad. This is written badly. Sorry. Oh, boy. Okay, so let's try it again. Strangely, we say again, this does not mean that there is not sincerity in the moves that the president might make from the standpoint of what he might decide as to our destiny as he decides from so-called superior knowledge. But the fact is that what he might consider is right does not mean that he will have the support of the people who may be right when he is wrong. I do see this, and I mention it to you now, that the continual use of the request of JFK was merely an attempt to copy the FDR, which was so popular in carrying out the continuation of the policies of that earlier administration. We turn in this hour to see what is the motion affecting our society. Where do we stand prophetically at this hour? We are without doubt in an historic hour, which has been in effect the last 20 years especially. If you were to turn to the 16th chapter of Revelations, you will discover that there are forces which move out of the kingdom of darkness and that they blaspheme the God of the heavens, and they are getting ready for the confirmation of their desire. Yes, it's called the externalization of the hierarchy, which is to take over the earth. This is what they want to do. Of course, they move out of Asia and out of the kingdoms of darkness with an intense hatred of everything which is American, an intense hatred of everything Christian, of everything that is Western civilization. And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water therefore dried up, and the way of the rulers out of the east might be prepared. What is this talking about? One of the most powerful forces among nations was the barriers of the seawall of humanity. As you turn in the scriptures, you discover that the great waters of the scriptures are masses of people, and they are referred to as seas of humanity. And the symbol of Babylon falling into the sea is Babylon being swallowed up by the masses, and the masses overthrow this thing which is to be cast out. But in this instance, he talks about the power of darkness out of the kingdom of darkness, who gnash their teeth in the hatred of God's kingdom. Here they are somewhat held back by the forces of the symbol of the great river Euphrates. So what was this symbol? The great river Euphrates. It wasn't just a stream marking a geographical mark upon the map that finds its close relationship to Ur of the Chaldees and ancient Babylon. The great river Euphrates was the kingdoms which were made up and came under the administration of the sultans, which ruled after the death of Genghis Khan, and his hordes were rolled back into the steppes and the areas of Tibet. There arose out of that Mongolian invasion the sultans and the great Kaban, as it was known. One well remembered that under this, the Turkish Empire and many of the Muslim societies and states, and the rising sheikdoms rolled back, and Tatars and the sultans who took over the area of the Middle East, and the great lines which divided Asia from Europe carried on much of the attacks which the hordes of the Khan had carried on. Khan. Genghis Khan. But it was for their own increase in authority and power. And when the mercenaries that rode with the sultans moved up to the southern Europe, they carried on their onslaught. They often alternated between the Tatars, Mongols, who came down from the northern steppes, and the hordes that moved under the crescent. and the star. You see, they tell you that they don't have anything to do with the crescent and the star. When you talk to these Muslims, that crescent stands for the god Hubal, and the true name of that god is Baal. And the star, as you well know, can represent Lucifer, the morning star, but it also can represent the star that's on our tanks. You see, because those are the Jews. The star of Amalek. So he continues, Mohammedism was also riding for world conquest and the height of power. The one thing that stopped their conquest of Western Europe was the knighthood of Christian civilization. There was no doubt that there was certain standards of chivalry that were observed, both by Muslim knighthood as well as Christian knighthood, which set the standards. There is no doubt that great battles persisted for centuries between the power of Mohammedism and the powers of Christianity, one fighting for the conquest of the power of the Prophet Mohammed over the Middle East and the hope of extending it over Asia and most of the world. That was the ambition of their background. Christianity had picked the flower of their knighthood to take back the Holy Land because it was important to them because the sacred things which had happened there, important because that this was the land which Christ had lived, the land in which Christ had lived, and in which their shrines had significant importance. More than that, even though they did not know what it was, but they were moving back to hold an ancient title right and for the great knighthood of Christendom, and had come out of a people to whom the title right of old Palestine had been originally given. Before they went into their captivities and before they had migrated through the Caucasian passes to form the great nations of Western civilization. That's you and I, ladies and gentlemen. You and I, tribes of Israel. There can be no question but that the knighthood reached the impact of stopping the spread of Mohammedism from moving into the heart of Europe. Thus, it was stayed out of the great areas of Europe, but it stood out in the great areas of the plains of ancient Shinar and the areas controlled by the sultans of Turkey. And in the days of Solomon the Magnificent, it had probably reached its greatest height. And the Turkish power of Mohammedism and the great Kaban was most known as the most powerful force of the area and time. Nations sent their ambassadors to and from, even the nations of Western Europe in the periods of their troops in battle, still sent their ambassadors to this great shrine of Mohammedan power. However, as long as it remained strong, then it was true. But even at this time, new political rising forces were beginning to move out through all the areas of Asia. There must be noted that the power, or it must be noted, they should say, it must be noted that the powers which created world communism and Karl Marx and his political philosophy and gave him power to spread it are the same powers that brought against the Western civilization the hordes of Genghis Khan. See, this is a pattern of the enemy, as you can see. As he's reflecting about history right here, this is always what took place. When the Jew couldn't gain control of a nation, or he was kicked out of a nation, or in the Byzantine Empire when they were sort of paralyzed at that point and kept in check, they always sought the Muslim hordes to pay them to come in and try to, you know, get the destroy the country so that they would have friends with these Muslims, even though the Muslims, it's just a bizarre thing to see as the same thing as you're seeing today, because these Muslims hate the Jews, yet they still make deals with the Jews, which is quite interesting and something to be looked into. One of the great obstacles to gathering of the hordes was a march into Europe was faced with this fact that no longer was Mohammedism a part of the dragon. Now that the ancient realms under the sultans and Mohammedism had moved into the cycle of 200 years of history, they had then isolated themselves from the previous hordes who had once been joined to them. Thus, they became a powerful stream, such as the river Euphrates, in its impact. These out of the stream were the peoples of the Turkish Empire, and the stream of Ishmael, and the people who came out of the Mohammedan Mount Seir. Uh-oh. You know who Mount Seir is, right? The Edomites. Because of this, therefore, their power and their strength was considered an obstacle to any Asiatic force ever marching into the lands of the people of Western civilization. I think, therefore, that one of the strangest things which evolved in this drying up of the Euphrates, the empire of the sultans, which had existed from the time of Genghis Khan and his death to the time that the Soviet Revolution was being formed, with the hordes out of Asia being gathered again, is that this gathering is once more the Antichrist to be hurled against Christian civilization. It is rather significant that as one thing had occurred in World War I was the overthrow of the power of Turkey, until she was no longer a barrier to anything. Notice who has control of Turkey today, ladies and gentlemen. Who is one of the greatest allies of Israel? Turkey. Remember what happened in Turkey, because the young Turks, who were Jews, pretended they were Turks. And they told the people of that time, we believe you have, well, I would use the word terrorists among you. But if you just give up all of your guns, we can all be free and live free. Listen up, America. They gave up their guns. And lo and behold, the next thing that happened to them was there were 1.5 million were killed. They cut their hands off and strewn them on the sides of the highways. And you can look into the story yourself. But today we have a crypto-Jew, Erdogan, who is now against Russia because Russia is against the Jews. So he's showing his friendliness to Israel. And so we see that what he's saying here was the overthrow of the power of Turkey until she was no longer a barrier to anything. You see, she was a barrier. She was a barrier in many ways to the oil barons too, I'm sure. For in that period of time, the administration of Palestine was taken back. From that time on, the mandate of Palestine was passed over to the peoples of the house of Joseph, people of identity. Christian identity? People of identity. And it ended for the first time in a great many years. The administration by the Turks over this land, remember that for 1,335 years under the Igerian calendar, that the Turks and the Mohammedan people had held sway over Palestine. But destiny had declared that this should pass back in the end of this measure of prophecy into the hands of the people who constituted the proper mandate of God's Israel. There it would remain until the time in which we live. When the abomination of desolator was to come, or I should say desolation was to come, in and try to take possession of the Holy Land, there it was to remain until the time of the hand of God's judgments, with great earthquakes, battles, and wars by which those usurpers will be destroyed in the areas of the usurpation. Thus it is that we can say that these occupiers of Israeli or Palestine, or it should say of Israel or Palestine, are the abomination or the desolation who have moved into the holy place. But out of World War I came the experiences which surround the Arab leadership of Arab legions under the command of Colonel Lawrence and the fulfillment of prophecy by General Allenby. And when the Turks surrendered their swords before the conquest of that war, the Turkish Empire, which had united all the Muslim kingdom, was no longer a great and mighty unit, and that prophecy of the scripture had not been fulfilled. And we saw the drying up of the waters of the Euphrates, the streams of the people of the East, with whom they would have to negotiate. In fact, in the time which you are living, the people of Turkey and the Mideast have only one source of protection outside their own strength, which, united with your leadership, might be so strong. But apart from that, they have only one strength, which is to turn to Western civilization nations, or specifically the United States, to assist them against a Soviet seizure of their territory or a violation of their rightful homeland. You must remember that one of the strongest allies that we have had since the end of World War II is Turkey. And Turkey has permitted us to lay missile sites there, in which we have the possible missile launching pads under the very hammer of American military strength and pointing at the Soviet Union. Nice. We point this out to you because this precedes the words of the 16th chapter of Revelation. I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. Someone said, "What are these three unclean spirit like frogs?" It wasn't many days ago I heard a naive clergyman say, "Oh, these are communism, fascism, and Nazism." Nazism. Well, that is a rather strange situation, because this isn't exactly what it constitutes. It isn't talking about fascism, with which we do not agree, nor with Nazism, there's no such thing, which is an un-American institution. Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. To our shame, it's an un-American institution. But it is talking about evil powers, and communism is involved because it is talking about the beast, and that which comes out of the mouth of the beast may very well be identified as the philosophy of socialism and world communism. But when we talk about these three unclean spirits like frogs, they are spirits of devils working their strange phenomena and miracles and going forth among the earth in order to gather them to a great and mighty battle for that great day of God Almighty. You know, what's funny, I would just interject this just as a thought. Three of the frogs that I can think of that are unclean spirits. Well, I would say Uncle Joe was one. I would say Winston Churchill was one. And I would also say that, of course, FDR was one. However, I really don't know, and I'm not officially saying that that's who they are. However, these three made sure that that war would take place. They were determined to make that war take place. And two of them especially, and that is, of course, Winston Churchill and FDR. Hitler wanted no part of war. He did not want to kinsman. He did not want to do any of those things. They forced him. They forced Germany into this war. Because they wanted to make money, too. Because that's always part of the Jews' plot. Money is everything in war. There's so many, you know, who runs the arms companies? The Jews do, of course. And who stands to make money? The bankers, the Jew bankers, on both sides of the war. And all the countries that get destroyed, they can give loans to help them build them back up. And when those loans cannot be paid, they'll just take them over. You see? So these unclean frogs could be who I'm saying it is, but I'm not saying that officially yet because I need to do more study into that. But certainly these three have heavy Jewish connection and heavy connection to communism and socialism, to say the least. And they made sure the deaths of Germany occurred. Those deaths need not have occurred. That's the tribe of Judah. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he be naked and they see his shame. This is, of course, written to the church. The only garments of divine standard is the righteousness of Yahweh. The only covering which men wear before God is whether they are enveloped within the framework of his standards of righteousness, and instead of imputing their own righteousness in their own way, they accept God's laws, pay attention, God's laws and God's standards, and then claim the impact of his atonement and claim the justification of his grace and the standards of his laws. This means that the people who make up the society of the Christian civilization, the society of the Western world, are the only people who are looking for the appearing of Yahweh God to intervene in human affairs, and therefore their garments are faith in the things he had to say. Very interesting. We are faced with the fact that these spirits go forth as devils, and they are gathering men together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. However, the general contention concerning Armageddon, as it is referred to as the great and final struggle, see, that's the thing, this World War I and World War II or whatever, that's not the final struggle, so they probably aren't the three unclean frogs, but still they are unclean frogs to me. So if the final battle is Armageddon, so we will see. Let's see who he says they are. We'll see. He already told you that communism is a great part of these three frogs. So, however, the general contention concerning Armageddon, as it is referred to, as the great and final struggle by Enoch, who had his instructions ages ago from the angels who briefed him for this hour. This is no longer a battle fought in one narrow valley, and is no longer isolated in one single plain. For Enoch is told that this great battle will be fought all over the world, even as great battles were fought in the Valley of Armageddon. In the days of Enoch, there had been no battle of Armageddon, but he was taught that a great and final battle would be fought against the Prince of Battle, a battle against the incarnate embodied form of Lucifer and his forces in the earth. A struggle against his children and his household would take place. Enoch was given to understand that from all the corners of the world, from every race of every people who served every false religion and every false idolatry would come to the hordes. He is given the knowledge to recognize that all things which would not accept Jesus as the Christ, all nations, all powers, would become involved. Enoch was told that they would use all of their powers in the fields of economy and commerce to manipulate and try to create a catastrophe and an encirclement and a downfall for Christian civilization. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Are you listening? He was told that they would wage war against us, that every false religion would pour forth its support against the resistance of the nations of the Western Christian world. Is that happening, ladies and gentlemen? It sure is. And that out of the dragon would come an attempt to form a super world government under which all nations and all men would pass, with the exception of God's kingdom, which would fight for the retention of its liberties. Now, when one considers that Enoch understood this, and that he says, "Fear not." Now pay attention, listen to what Enoch says, because this is not to cause you to fear. You must keep your righteousness, which is your faith. You must keep faith and know that Yahweh will deliver us. So here's Enoch's advice. "Fear not, for in that day shall Yahweh come with thousands, times 10,000s, times thousands of his saints, come in judgment. And there shall be a great victory for the kingdom in that day." I think that as far as prophetic history is concerned, that we who have watched prophetic developments of the last few decades can say that the drying up of the empire of the Turks and the power of the Mohammedan forces was then drying up of the power of the forces between the East and West of Western Europe, and thus made way for the movements of the rulers of the East to come against Western civilization. Thus, the supplanting of the great strength and power of this Muslim civilization saw the communist agents moving into the Middle East, tied in with their close association with Zionism and their previous commitments. They stir trouble constantly in order to bring about intertribal trouble, in order to bring about the betrayal of the Middle East area. When we see these words, "three unclean spirits like frogs, then his name," frog is used here because of its continuity, an ancient symbol which runs down through the symbolism of your race back in ancient times, which were identified with evil and secret occult evil. One of them was the symbol of the serpent, aho, the symbol of the frog, and then there was the symbol of a strange type of lizard, which was used upon the emblems of the very occult forces of the false religions of Asia. So, these emblems were always identified with the mud and slime. Thus, three unclean spirits like frogs, back in the mystery schools, the frog was a symbol of utter evil, and the symbol of the extent of that evil to move out either on water or dry land to carry out that evil objective. Now, the book of Revelation identifies these ancient patterns. It doesn't have to leave it up to your imagination. It tells you that these three unclean spirits, like frogs, are devils, utter evil, and they move out of the mouth of the dragon. Now, let me point out something here. When it's talked about in, even here, or it's talked about in Revelation 12, verse 15, the mouth of the dragon, for the most part, you see, as we are Christians, and if some one of us was a prophet, we on this planet are the mouth of Yahweh. Because the prophet who was there at those times would speak what Yahweh told him to speak. So he was the mouth of Yahweh. In the same way, the dragon has a mouthpiece upon the earth. And this mouthpiece, for the most part, is his literal offspring, the Jews, the Edomites. Call them what you wish. However, his mouthpiece extends in those other nations, the nations of the dragon. You notice how China has always had the dragon involved. If you go into a Chinese restaurant, which I never will ever again and haven't for a very long time, you would always notice that the dragon symbolism. I remember once asking the lady there, I said, "Why do you have a dragon all over the place? Why is there a dragon on the wall or a dragon?" She wouldn't answer the question. Can you guess why? However, the mouth of Satan could even come out of, the mouth of the dragon could even come out of St. Peter's mouth. I don't know, I shouldn't call him St. Peter, but Peter, get thee behind me, Satan. Right? So the mouth of the dragon can be various things, but for the most part, the mouth of the dragon would be the Jews when we're speaking about mouthpiece. However, when these hordes come out of the mouth of the dragon, the flood comes out of his mouth, what he's saying is there are many people, there are many types of evil. There are evil societies. There's Freemasons. There's Mongol hordes. There's when I told you that the crescent and the star, what it stands for, the Jews created Islam, and Islam is not a religion. I know you don't want to believe that, but Islam is a political movement, is what it is. It appears to be a religion, but it is actually a political movement. And so we see that they are poured out into our nations and all into Europe right now too. They're part of the flood, right? So you see that the god of that political movement was the Jews who created it, and the god Hubal, which is Baal. So the mouth of the dragon can be very much extended to, you know, this is the way I see it, okay? So let's see what he says here. Let us remember what the dragon consists of. Now he's going to tell you. We well identify Asia with the symbol of the dragon, for no country identifies itself as well as Asia with the symbol of the dragon. I think it is nice to have pretty parades and things like that, but I think we would do well not to have dragons in our Rose Parade. There would be lots of things in America to identify with rather than the dragon. Because this sign of the dragon is not acceptable to those who understand its significance in this prophetic hour, the dragon is the symbol of Asia, the symbol of our enemy. Even back in the heraldry of our race and in the history of the traditions and the opposition of the Knights of the Round Table and St. George and the Dragon, these, my friends, were not just fictitious stories. They were great symbolic stories of the struggle of the great round table of defense of Christian civilization, with its hidden mysteries of the evils of Asia, seeking to destroy the kingdom of God in earth. Strangely enough, the seed of the dragon is not confined to the peoples who came out of Japan. He calls it Japan, which is interesting because that's exactly how you would say it. The J would be silent. It would be like a Y. Japan. He said one time in one of his, he may even say it here, I'm not sure, but he said that the Japanese people were like, what do you call it? I can't remember exactly how he, like goat people, because of the way they had their things. He said they came from Japan. So let's go on here. Strangely enough, the seed of the dragon is not confined to the peoples who came out of Japan or out of Asia, where the features we see are Mongols' features or the Asiatic type. But the dragon is involved as well in the offspring of Lucifer, who have installed the dragon emblem over these peoples and territories. When we talked about the offspring of Lucifer, we are definitely talking about a people who have grown up in the earth as a violation of divine law. Very interesting. The unassimilable, this is a hard one. The unassimilatable descendants of Lucifer and his fallen angels. When Jesus turned to a certain people and said, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do," he was not merely making a parody of events, but he was dividing. As he pointed them out, they were a progeny of Lucifer. Yes, they were, and are. And they acted like their father, and they thought like their father, and he didn't expect them to be any different than their father, who was a liar from the beginning and who fought against Yahweh. This was one of the things that Yahweh did declare. I think there is one thing that Christians should remember. That's how you say it. And that is, when God talked about his kingdom, when embodied in earth as the man Jesus Christ, he refers to the great spirit which fills the heavens and the earth as the Father, even to the body in which he resided. And he says, "I was before all things, and I gave the law," and thus identifies himself with the everlasting Father. Let us think of identification of the embodied man as he says, "I am of the Father." Very interesting. "And you are of your Father." He challenges the disciples and all of this race as he says, "If I be lifted up, I will draw all Adamites, or men, unto me." Therefore, the ultimate rising Christian civilization upon all white men had been ordained and declared by the Christ himself. There has not been a universal sweep over all people who walk upright or wear clothes or lack of them throughout the world. But it is the fact that the people who embrace him are the seed of Adam, and in this hour have turned and found themselves drawn to this identity. And it is firmly established that the Adamic race is the white race. The student of prophecy and the book of Ezekiel would bring the conclusion that the white race was the last race to come into earth, that the other races were existing long before them, and this is described so clearly by Ezekiel. Faced with these facts, then, the children of the kingdom of God have come from the origin of fatherhood of Yahweh, which begat them. See, he begat them. When you say begat in the scriptures, that means you are the offspring. He begat them, which was different than the other races. Adam was known as the son of God. And in heaven, Adam and Eve were known as the image of God. Actually, Adam was known as the image of God. And the enemies of God's kingdom, who led these kingdoms and nations of the world, were not of the same seed, but were created to live and serve and worship him. But the nations of the world were seduced by the darkness, and now they are the victims of the children of the dragon. Therefore, when we talk about the dragon, don't misunderstand the ability of the scriptures to identify the dragon. There are groups of people who have this notion that when we see emblems in revelations, that there is a ministerial license in saying that the dragon represents this people or the dragon represents that people. But when we talk about the dragon empires, remember that they are the empires under the dragon's influence, which dragon of the scripture tells us about. Over in the book of Revelation, I turn to the 12th chapter because of the great significance of the key of understanding this book. We read here, "And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon. And the dragon stood before the woman for to destroy her child as soon as it was born." Herod. Herod the Edomite. But let's go on. Let's see what he says. "I think that it's interesting to note that there was a war in heaven, and Michael and his angels fought, and the dragon and his angels fought, and the dragon and his angels were thrown out of heaven, or hurled out of heaven, as the devil put it." Now, who is this old dragon? He is that old serpent called the devil, Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. But he and his angels were cast unto the earth. So if you want to know who the dragon is, then the scripture tells you that he is Satan and his offspring in the earth. Aha, see? You say, but how do you know? Well, the scripture here tells you who he is, and what his power is, and what it consists of. Tells you that the dragon has hordes, and the flood out of the mouth of the dragon. The great seed of the dragon moves out against God's kingdom. When you want to find the seed of the dragon, you find out who Jesus said were the dragon's children. I can understand that when you find out who this is, that you right away find a new set of people for the chosen people. Very good point. For the very movement you find out, from the very moment you found out who the dragon's seed are, then you see who God's seed are, and you discover that the people who constitute Christianity make up the great mass of the white race, and are not only the chosen of God, but they are the seed of the Most High. Yes, they are. They are the people of Christendom, and you will never again turn over the chosen blessings and covenants to a people who hated him and who trace their origin and destiny to a fallen angel who intermingled in the violation of divine law with the peoples of this earth. The false prophets of our time have been engaged in supporting the plans and designs of Lucifer. When I turn here in Revelations, I find that evil forces of darkness and spiritual intent move out from among the descendants of the dragon. I tell you that all the anti-Christian institutions seem to be in league at this time. They seem to be supporting the socializing of our society or its utter collapse if that fails. The system of the dragon has given us world communism. One of the documents I told you about last week was brought back from Washington, D.C. It is under the seal of the government and out of its own files of records from the intelligence reports from the chief of staff of U.S. intelligence records on Siberia. It was to the effect that out of 384 commissars who run the Red Revolution, that 300 of them, now get that again, it was to the effect that out of 384 commissars who run the Red Revolution, that 300 of them were Jews. I'm going to let that sink in for a second. And 264 of them came from the U.S. Now let me let that sink in. 264 of them came from the U.S. Upon the second page of this report was the information that the entire revolution was run by Jews of grievous type who had come from the U.S. Now, isn't that a rather strange thing? But we have the report under seal of the government that is a part of the seed of the dragon who have built up the dragon system and are to build up the dragon hordes and gather all of Asia so that they might move against the children of God and overthrow the kingdom in the midst of the earth. You will note here that the evil globs out of the mouth of the beast, the political system of world socialism and world communism of today, is the political system. That's why I tell you that Yahweh doesn't like politics. The last system, which is to gather the peoples of all colors to come against God's kingdom. This beast or political system had great danger because they are wooing the seducing spirits. They have moved out of that political system to make political allies out of the nations all over the world. See? Political allies. Islam is a political ally, not a religious ally. Islam is a political movement, not a religion. Let me read it again. The beast or political system had great danger because they are wooing and seducing spirits. They have moved out of that political system to make political allies out of the nations all over the world. Inside of the United States, which is part of the beast system in the world today, they move with great strength. The UN is a violation of every phase or divine instruction. It is the joining together of the kingdom of darkness and with the kingdom of God. You have been told to come out from among her, and be ye separate. This is part of Babylon's political power. Yes, what place does light have with darkness? You see, you can't join light with darkness because the sparks will fly. It's not meant to be. It can't be. If I shine a flashlight into a dark room, the darkness must secede. The darkness must give way to the light. That's why we are told to be the light of the world. You, dear Christian, if you are a Christian, not Judeo-Christian, you are what this very thing is, a joining of the darkness and light, and this just can't be. So in your plight to join with the darkness and the children of the dark kingdom and the dragon's children, you have now become darkness and are no longer the light of the world, Judeo-Christian. You have let your light secede to the darkness, when in fact, it is just, it's going against the very fabric of the universe. Because darkness has to give way to light. It's just that simple. That's why he says we are the light of the world. We are clarifying the darkness. We are showing and exposing what's hiding in the corners of the darkness. You are to be a reflection of Yahweh. You are to be a reflection of Yeshua, Yahweh, as a teacher. As I have reported to you before, I was greatly cheered by foreign experts who talk about the unworkability of this institution. For under the guise of Mystery Babylon, even the president of the U.S. must have been seduced by one of these spirits, because he went before that great false body, where we still retain a slight balance of power, and he asked them to recognize 19 out of 21 voodoo tribes of Africa, which are not Christian at all. That makes sense now, does it not? Someone said, how can you explain this act of Mr. Eisenhower? Well, I can explain it. But let's see what he says. Remember, he's known as the terrible Swedish Jew, and his mother was a mulatto. So he is, therefore, a Falasha Jew. So he goes on, I explain it this way, seducing spirits out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the false prophet, I don't think that Mr. Eisenhower was too bright. I am not mourning the fact that he is in Gettysburg. I just hope he stays there. I look out on the history of the past few years, and there are very few things to which I can point to and say that that was an accomplishment. In fact, only one major event we can now point to is that he told the Jews to get back out of Egypt after they had illegally invaded it. And if he had not said that, we would have started Armageddon several years ago. As it was, he only postponed it as he sent them home. They went home grudgingly, but promised never to forgive him for it. If there was another instance, it was being the cutting off of the Cuban Revolution, which had been living beyond its proper time. It should have been cut off when they first violated their treaty with America. When they confiscated our property and started on their road to tyranny, America is a great and powerful nation, and we were responsible for the areas that we live in. We are responsible for the influence of our power. You see, I don't believe that he knows that he knew that Eisenhower, what he did to the Germans and all that, but I'm not sure of that. But it doesn't seem like he's mentioning anything about that here. So let's go on. And so we turn to this picture. Out of the mouth of the beast, there is no doubt that the beast is a political power, a political philosophy which is wrong. The beast system is the system of world communism and world socialism. You might as well just call it democracy. Analyzing our economic problems tonight, the beast system has provided a great part of the dangers we find ourselves surrounded with. They have provided the political background for the organization of men, and they have supported and been supported all the time by Mystery Babylon the Great. Now, Mystery Babylon the Great is economics. In fact, you have three divisions of this: political, economical, and social and religious. Oh, yes, he's right. See, when I tell you the Freemasons originated in Babylon, when I tell you the Catholic religion is a Babylonian religion, when I tell you the Jews and their Talmud, you know, a lot of that came right from Babylon. So this is how, not only that, Rothschild and the Babylonian money system that we are involved in here, et cetera, et cetera. So he goes on. In fact, you have three divisions of this: political, economical, and social and religious factors, which are tied together. The impact of the false prophet of this system is to proclaim things not true. It is actually to bear testimony against the real truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The false prophets of today are largely embodied in all those who deny that Jesus is the Christ, and all institutions who are tied with it, which make war against the true church or against the nations of his kingdom. Now, The false prophet does not always operate outside of your nation, for you have some of them operating in your schoolrooms, in your colleges, who continue to bear the testimony of the false prophet, find themselves identified with the faith, with that faith and that work. These are false prophets who have come right out, right inside of the very church, and we were warned by the Apostle Paul to look out for many of these workers of Lucifer who would appear as angels of light. No wonder, because Lucifer himself appeared as an angel of light. And his ministers have put on a like appearance, and they proclaim that they have a solution for all the problems, and they would like to assist in the deliverance of the people. And they praise and advance all these systems of communism and socialism and attack the great fundamental principles of the American way. Inside of this, we listen to the false prophet making it no longer important that you identify your faith with the Christ and that you remain firm to this cause. I think as we survey the problems of this hour as it relates to our faith, and that the greatest problems of the kingdom of God today and the nations of Christendom that make up the kingdom is that the false prophet is weakening the resistance to the enemy and is trying to bring a guilt complex upon us for opposing other gods. Did you know that inside of some of our seminaries, they are trying to give students a guilt complex if they do not embrace all other religions? Now, they do not exactly come out to do that, but they say, you as a Christian must love everybody. You must give every man his turn to speak. You must recognize all religions. You must respect all types of men's worship. You must recognize that all men are attempting to reach for good. And you must respect all avenues they use to arrive at their worship and good. Well, I don't accept that, for God's kingdom was set here for his worship, and he said, hear, O Israel, Yahweh thy God is a jealous God. He wants your service in the proclamation of his name, and he doesn't want you to share that with any other theology, and he doesn't want you to retreat before it or bow or accept this false testimony. I had to add a word there. It's just completely missing. I think if there is anything that marked the fanaticism of the Eisenhower administration, and remember that a lot of people become very magnanimous when it goes out of power, they suddenly become sorry for a tired old man who had been in the White House for 8 years and played golf over the nation and world. I am sorry too, for we would have greater victories and we would have been better off if he had never made it into the White House. Yes, it says white horse here. I mean, this is the stuff you have to go through. I guess I should have gone through the whole thing and corrected it myself. I'm not a great grammar scholar or anything, but I mean, this is challenging, let's say. You know, some people look at me real stern, and then when I say something like that, they look even more stern, but it doesn't bother me because they have been looking at me like that for a long time. If you are a Republican that has to hide your head before Republican sins because you don't want to acknowledge them, then you will never help the Republican Party. And the Democrats who want to cover up the evil things which happen in their administration will never help their party. It is when America rises with the call of the kingdom of Christ to throw out the aliens in both parties and bring forth that which is good and throw out that which is evil. Then America will obtain its great position of leadership. Now, I don't really even want to delve into any of the politics or anything like that. And I think you get the gist of the message. There is just a bit more, and I could finish it up next week. Perhaps I will. But you see the beast system, and you see these hordes coming after us now. The Muslim hordes coming after Christendom is nothing new. There is nothing new under the sun. Stand your ground. Love your own people. Protect your own people. Love Yahweh. Obey his laws. Be in continual prayer and preparation. And just know that he is there always amongst his people. When they were out there in the deserts, he was in the middle of the camp. The same goes for heaven. Yahweh's throne is around the four living creatures who were the tribes of Israel. They were the four main flags out of the 12 tribes. And Yahweh is in the midst of his people. He is waiting for you to return to him if you have not yet. And I suggest you do it immediately. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved. Hi, this is David James with the Eurofolk Radio Network here at eurofolkradio.com. Be sure to check out our new show, Founding Fathers, Wednesdays, 5:30 to 7 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time or 10:30 to 12 a.m. UK GMT.
Captain, there's some kind of a transmission coming through. I don't know what it is. Well, let me know when you find out, Scotty. Yes, aye, Captain. It's some kind of a... It says E. F. R. A whizzahura. Sees out burning cars and vehicles and stamping on people and killing people with her race. Oh, what a shame. Well, let me know when you find out what this is. Aye, Captain. Aye, Captain. It's coming through now. It says Eurofolk Radio. Some kind of a show. Well, bring it through. Aye, Captain.